Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Bo. Recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the fourth day of Shvat, 5769, on the secular calendar, January 29th. The old line, good news and bad news. The weather in Jerusalem today is beautifully good, which is terribly bad. We desperately await rain. We pray for it extra. And we've just had a run of unbelievably pleasant, nice days, sunny days. And especially when you read on the news the devastating weather conditions in various parts of the United States and elsewhere around the world, and deaths that are attributed to the bad weather, you wonder what's going on. We need water, we need rain, we need beneficial, blessed rain, not just any old rain, and certainly not destructive rain. So rain is in our prayers extra, since Simchat Torah we have been saying that God is the Mashiv HaRuach HaMorit HaGashem since the 7th of Cheshvan, and outside of Israel since December 4th or 5th. We have been asking V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. In Israel, I don't know where else, but in Israel we have been adding the special prayer into the weekday Amidah for Atzirat Geshamim, times of severe lack of rain, and it is our hope and prayer that our combined efforts, not only at prayer but at becoming better people and better Jews, will open the gates of beneficial rain, and that God will treat us with midat harachamim, and we will be privileged to good rainfall. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai mi'amod, ki imecha haslicha l'ma'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, המקום ירחם עליהם ויוציאם מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. The main event, if you want to say it like that, in Parshat Bo is Yetziat Mitzrayim, leaving Egypt. That sort of is key to the Jewish story that I have to call it the main event. But it is preceded by the last three plagues, that of Arba, the locust, Choshech, darkness, and the final one, which was Paro, was warned about way back at the beginning, the killing of the firstborns, or the deaths of the firstborns. The promise, threat, prophecy of Arba, locust. I wrote in Torah Tidbits, the hard copy this week about locust. It's an incredible story of nature. And even if you want to say that the Makot were totally supernatural, the natural of Arba, of locust, can easily produce the description, and you don't need to go to the Me'al Lateva, above nature, supernatural, for a picture of what locust is. The plague of Arba, in our own records around the world, scientists discovered that individual grasshoppers undergo physiological and behavioral changes, for the worse, we'll say, when they begin to swarm. If an individual grasshopper has his own space, area, whatever you want to call it, he's a passive, mild-mannered insect. When they are overcrowded for various reasons, they change. They become aggressive, gregarious. They reproduce at a higher rate. They eat at a higher rate. And they increase in the size of their swarm astronomically. And they're just different individuals. Well, they're not individuals. The only thing I could think of in terms of human experience is mild-mannered people who, under a mob philosophy, become different. A mob psychology, become different. And a person after the mob scene will say to himself, that wasn't me. What got into me? I don't behave like that. But people do things in a mob that they would not, by nature, do on their own. I don't know how close this analogy is, but when it comes to grasshoppers that reach the swarming stage of locust, it is just incredible. The internet describes large swarms of locust where they include between 5 and 10 billion members, each one capable of eating its own body's weight in a day. That would be about 2 grams. But when you're talking 10 million locusts, 10 billion, sorry, you're talking about thousands of tons of produce consumed in a day. The devastation is of, to not coin a phrase, but to purposely use it, of biblical proportions. In any event, I didn't really set out to tell you that much about locust. What I did want to point out is when Moshe comes to Paro, and he says, if you don't let the people go, there's going to be a plague of locust, Paro's first reaction is to shoo him out of the palace, which he does. But then his court, his advisors, prevail upon him when they say to Paro, Ad matai yihyeh lanu lemokesh, how much longer are these people going to be for us a magnet for our troubles? It's my free rendering. Send the people out and let them serve their God like they want to. Haterem teidaki avadom mitzrayim. Otherwise it will be lost. So Paro accepted that, brought Moshe and Aaron back, and said, go and serve your God, but mi vami haholachim. Who's going? Moshe gives an answer to that question, who is going, by saying, Bin Arenu uvizkeinenu nelech, with our youth and our elderly we will go, Bivanenu uvivnotenu, with our sons and our daughters, Bitzonenu uviv korenu nelech, and our cattle and livestock, kichag Hashem lanu. Our method of serving God is the whole family. It is not just the adult males who are active or the adults who are active in religious matters. It is bin arenu uvizkenenu nelech. That angered Paro. He said, no, the men can go, not interested in sending the children. Get out of my face. Vayegoresh otam me'et penei faro. They were chased out from in front of Paro. The point here is very instructional for us. One of the commentaries actually says the wording in the Torah, bin arenu, with our youth, uvizkenenu, and our elderly, puts youth first, because within youth lies our future. And that is very important. Our religion flourishes and thrives and survives generation to generation because it is bin arenu uvizkenenu. If it were not something that you start training little children with and getting them to enjoy doing mitzvot and being Jewish and raise them and teach them and nurture them all the way through their formative years, the religion would have died out. But our secret of eternal existence is bin arenu uvizkenenu nelech. I have a little clip of Avraham Fried, which is a composite of three different verses plus a words that were added. The first verse is from next week's Torah reading of B'Shalach, where it describes the multitude of the children of Israel leaving Egypt, Biyad Ramah, and we went out. The Exodus took place, so to speak, in Parshat Bo, but there is the follow-through description of that crucial number of days following the Exodus. The second verse is bin arenu uvizkenenu nelech. We go with our children and our elderly and certainly the adults and male and female. And the third pasuk goes back again to Parshat B'Shalach, forward again to Parshat B'Shalach, and it speaks of hityatzvu uru, stand by and see the great redemption and miracles that God will do for us. And then it brings in Mashiach as the hint, we'll say, towards the complete redemption, which is still in the future. But as far as Yetziat Mitzrayim is concerned, it is summed up in this particular song as we went out in a great multitude. We go out with our youth and our elderly, male and female, and we stand by and watch God and his role in taking us out of Egypt.
I'm
Readers of Torah Tidbits and listeners of Torah Tidbits audio no doubt know of my particular favorite topic of mitzvah, that of the Jewish calendar, the source of the Torah, in the Torah, for the mitzvah of setting up a Jewish calendar is in this week's portion of Parshat Bo, with the words, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. There is another pasuk later in Parshat Bo, V'shamarta et hachuka hazot lemoada miyamim yamima, from which we learn, in addition to it being spelled out in a different pasuk in Devarim, we learn that the calendar needs to be adjusted so that Pesach is always in the springtime, but our calendar is essentially a lunar calendar that follows month by month the cycle of the moon, and tied to that is observance of Rosh Chodesh. Tied to that is the practice of announcing the new moon and the month coming, and when Rosh Chodesh is, on the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh. Tied in with this also is a very special mitzvah, and that of Kiddush Levana. Kiddush Levana, which I've spoken about countless times, but we'll put it into a certain perspective now, is said either from 3 full days after the Molad, the birth of the new moon, until full moon, or 7 days as the earliest until full. That's to be put with asterisks, which need explanation, some of which you'll get and some of which you'll have to wait for, unless you already know it. But the fact of the matter is, today, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, as I announced it, the 4th of Shvat, tonight being the eve of the 5th of Shvat, that's not what's relevant. What's relevant is that according to Minhag Yerushalayim, which is based primarily on the practices and teachings of the Vilna Gaon, known as the Gra, is to begin saying Kiddush Levana 3 days after the Molad. Now, the Molad, which literally means birth, refers to birth of the new moon, does not mean when we already can see a little crescent of moon. It's an earlier time of the moment, conjunction, I think is what it's called in English, when the moon and the sun are in the same direction as viewed from Earth. That is the time where a solar eclipse would be visible if there were one, and this past Monday there actually was. Not all over the world, for a solar eclipse never visible all over the world, but there was a path where the eclipse was visible. And 3 days after that, the Molad, according to the way we announce it, and I hope to clarify that as well, was Monday early morning. 3 full days brings us to Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday early morning. You cannot see the moon at this time of the month in the morning. You cannot see it until after dark. And tonight, and I say tonight as future, since it is still half an hour to an hour away, will be the first opportunity for Kiddush Levana in Israel. People in New York, let's say, will have 7 hours after that, when it gets dark there. Kiddush Levana is only said when it is dark and light is being delivered to us from the moon, and not when it's just visible in the sky, but the sun is responsible for the moon directly. Here, for the light directly. Here we're talking about, obviously, the moon reflecting the light of the sun, but it has to be dark, and that's when Kiddush Levana is, we are eligible to say it. We say Kiddush Levana on the either following 3 days, whenever that comes out in the month. It'll come out the eve of the third, the fourth, the fifth, depending on when exactly the Molad was. And as I said, it goes until midway from the current Molad to the next Molad. Okay, now please follow me on this. It's potentially confusing, and I try to make it as clear and understandable as possible. There is a moment of actual or astronomical Molad. In English, that would be the new moon, which is really no moon. It is when the earth, moon, and sun are lined up in that order. It is when the moon is between the earth and the sun. And when we look towards the sun, we cannot see the moon, except its dark image during an eclipse. But let's leave that out of the equation here. You can't see the moon at the Molad, at new moon. From our tradition, our month was meant to begin from the new moon, and it goes through the moon, that is, goes through its cycle of phases from not visible at all to a little bit of a crescent to a growing crescent, which is called a waxing crescent, and then half, and then full, and then it starts to wane, and it goes down and down and down and smaller until we can't see it anymore, bringing us to the next Molad.
I'm Rod Sterling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
Go ya bo, kachelo yochlu, go li bailin, go ya bilin,
We're back with the show for Parshat Bo. We were talking about Kiddush Levana, or Birchat HaLevana. Since the first half was over and the second one started, there was a very big gap for me, not so much for the listeners, since the two halves are stitched together. But what I have done since I last spoke was say Kiddush Levana. Had a long schmooze with my brother Binyamin about Kiddush Levana and other related things that I wanted to share with the listeners, so I will do that now. The music that you just heard is an old Avraham Fried number from Kiddush Levana, Kishem Sha'ani. It's the passage which we say three times, just as I am dancing before the moon and I cannot touch it, so too may my enemies not be able to touch me or harm me or us. Let me try to pick up the thread. I warned in advance that this might be confusing, and I think it will be unless I get to the point. The Molad this month was announced for Monday morning, this past Monday morning. The actual Molad, and I don't want to now go into the difference between actual, which is astronomic, and average, which is the one we announced. One way or the other, the Molad was Monday morning. Rosh Chodesh was Monday, but I'll get to that in a moment. If we had a Sanhedrin today, and we would use the preferred method of Ede Re'ia, eyewitness testimony, to the first visibility of the lunar crescent, then in fact, that occurred Tuesday evening, and Rosh Chodesh this month would not have been until Wednesday, when we had Rosh Chodesh, because we don't have a Sanhedrin, and we don't use eyewitness testimony, but we use mathematical calculation, our Rosh Chodesh turned out to be Monday. But I'm already confusing and not being as clear as I should be. There was a plan A and a plan B for the Jewish calendar. Plan A is when we have full representation of the Jewish world, which is the great Sanhedrin in Jerusalem. In that very first generation, Moshe and Aharon were in that position, and the elders. And in subsequent generations, it was the great Sanhedrin. Plan A says, when there is eyewitness testimony to the first visibility of the lunar crescent, the witnesses are to appear before a select committee of the Sanhedrin and give testimony in Jerusalem that they saw the Levana b'chidusha, the new moon, the moon in its newness. If that testimony is verified by astronomical calculations and expectations, then the following morning, the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, would proclaim that day as Rosh Chodesh, and any calendar events that depend upon Rosh Chodesh, the holidays specifically, would be established based on what day was Rosh Chodesh. Now it turns out that you could say it like this. God said to Moshe in Egypt, we will count the month to run from new moon to the following new moon as the moon goes through its cycles. First it's invisible, then you see a small crescent, then it gets larger and larger and larger, and then eventually halfway through the month it'll be full, and then it will wane, as I mentioned earlier. Moshe Rabbeinu says to God, and this is my way of putting it, you just used a confusing word. You said when the moon is invisible. The fact of the matter is that the moon is invisible for a night or two at the around the time of what we call the Molad, the birth of the new moon, when it is too close to the sun and not the visible part is not bright enough for us to see it. If that's when the month is supposed to start, and halakha, Jewish law, wants eyewitness testimony, then we have an obvious problem. Because when the month is supposed to start, and when we can see the first visibility of the lunar crescent, are not the same. God, so to speak, said to the people of Israel, tell you what I'm going to do. So much do I want you to be the active participants in the process of setting up your calendar. In fact, I want you to be the senior partner with me. I will wait until you are able to see the Levana b'chidusha, testify to that, proclaim the day as Rosh Chodesh, even though it will be a day or two later than it would be if you were able to see the instant of the Molad. If that's not confusing enough, look at Plan B. Plan B is a fixed calculated calendar, a calendar based on mathematical calculations, not actual astronomical calculations, but it is based on averages. It takes the moon to run through its phases from our perspective on Earth, 29 days and 12 hours, 44 minutes and a little bit more. And from one Molad to the next, we have the calculation. It does not depend upon a human being seeing the first visibility of the moon. Furthermore, it is only the Molad of Tishrei that is crucial to the calculation and determination of when Rosh Hashanah is. Next year's Molad of Tishrei determines when next Rosh Hashanah is. And we have calendar rules, calendric rules, of which months have 30 days and which have 29 and which vary when necessary. And therefore, Rosh Chodesh is not determined by eyewitness testimony. in our time. This is Plan B. Rosh Chodesh is not even determined by mathematical calculations of the Molad, because the Molad of Shvat, which is the month that we just started, has no bearing on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Coincidentally, and I say that a little facetiously, because it has to be right around there sometime, coincidentally, this month, I'm using the term literally, the Molad of Shvat was on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. But not because Rosh Chodesh depended upon the Molad of Shvat. If it did, it wouldn't have been on that same day, because you can never see the moon on the day of its Molad. I should qualify that, but we're talking hours here and there. The fact of the matter is that with a Sanhedrin, we end up with God's permission to technically postpone the beginning of a month so that we will be able to testify that we saw the new moon. And when we don't have eyewitness testimony, as in the aforementioned Plan B, then we end up with Rosh Chodesh, which is often more, quote, accurate, unquote, than with a Sanhedrin, which is ironic, because the ideal is when we have a Sanhedrin. The second best plan, when we've lost the Sanhedrin temporarily, a long temporary, I might add, the second best system is the mathematical calculation. And the mathematical calculation, since it doesn't depend upon eyewitness, turns out to be more to the day that God would have selected as Rosh Chodesh had he not wanted us to be involved in the process by eyewitness testimony. That's the irony. And if it sounded like I was giving you a runaround, I accept that it sounded that way. It wasn't meant to be like that. But that's the story. So we have the ironic situation of when things are ideal, they are less perfect, and sometimes even worse than that, with mistakes. And God, kivyochol, so to speak, smiles and says, that's how I want it. With its mistakes, with its inaccuracies, with the human factor in there. And it's a lot more complicated than I've just described. When you don't have a Sanhedrin, which is not equal to not having a Beit HaMikdash, but they are symptoms of the same kind of malaise of our society, then you'll end up with a more accurate but less involvement in the process of setting up of the calendar. It's not what God wants, but it's the way it will be until we get a Sanhedrin. I always make it, in my mind, analogous to the personal card for a birthday that a child will make for his parent, compared with going to the store and buying a Hallmark or an American Greetings card that is artistically and graphically and calligraphy-wise far superior to what the person himself with crayons or pens or whatever will create, but it is totally less personal. We are God's partners, senior partners, when we have a Sanhedrin, in the process of Kiddush HaChodesh. When we don't, we become paper partners, token partners, using calculations based on God's world, which we are not active in, we are observers are. And it is much, much less ideal. It's neater. It could be more accurate, just like the greeting card can be more beautiful, but it lacks that warmth and personality in a personal card, which is what the parent wants to receive from his child. I hope that I got something across there. Let's move on without yet moving on. And I've mentioned this in the past. I'll mention it again. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, the mitzvah of setting up the calendar, primarily belongs to that representative body of the Jewish people known as the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin current, we don't have. The Sanhedrin of old provided this mathematical system by which we can continue having a calendar until we get a new Sanhedrin. But we have an involvement in this also. First of all, there's learning about it, knowledge about it. I often say everybody seems to know 30 days, half September, April, June, and November. What about Sivan? How many days does the Jewish month of Sivan have? Shvat. We just started the month of Shvat. So if you know that there was one day Rosh Chodesh, and if you know that when there was one day, when there is one day of Rosh Chodesh, it means the previous month only has 29 days, you'll be able to know how many days Tevet had. What about Shvat? If you know that the months basically alternate, you'll know that Shvat has 30 days. And sure enough, the next Rosh Chodesh is 2 days Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh Adar, which the first of which is the 30th of Shvat. But a lot of Jewish people do not know how the calendar works, even on that elementary level. How many people are aware of their secular date of birth, but don't know their Jewish date of birth? How many people know the date today, January 29th? How many know that it is already, as I am speaking these words, the eve of the 5th of Shvat? If you do, fine. How many people use the Jewish date? I have said repeatedly, and I'm saying this now with a tremendous hakarat hatov, recognition to Rabbi Elihu Marcus, who spoke a long, long time ago at a Rosh Chodesh luncheon we had at the Israel Center, and he spoke on the topic of dating one's checks with the Jewish date. Now, do not try this in the country in which you live, unless that country is the State of Israel. In Israel, the Jewish date, as well as the secular date, are both officially recognized by all government agencies, all banks, post office, etc., etc. For the last 27 years, I have been privileged and thrilled and delighted to date every single check that I have ever written, and it's a lot. Every single check is dated with the Jewish date. I have run into storekeepers who say sheepishly, "Is that today?" to assure them that it's not a post-dated check. I say, "Yes, that's today. You want to look it up on the calendar? Be my guest." Others know that it is so. Because it's official here, we can use the Jewish date. Because we can use the Jewish date, we should. Because every use of the Jewish date is a fulfillment of the spirit of the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. Our month number one is not January. It is Nisan. And whether we call it the first month or we call it Nisan, we are using the Jewish calendar as God commanded us to have. Those of you who are listening to this who don't live here and have to continue dating your checks January 29th for today, you should, every time you write a secular date, you should have that little tiny pang in your heart saying, "Chaval, too bad that I don't live in Eretz Yisrael, where I'm able to date the checks in Hebrew." Of course, there are a lot of other reasons to bemoan not living in Eretz Yisrael, not living in the land of Israel and in the state of Israel, but Right now we're focusing on HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. It's a special, special privilege to be able to walk into a bank, see their public calendar, where the first thing you see this morning is Dalid Shvat 5769. The second thing you see is January 29th, 2009. There's a lot of Pesach stuff from Parshat Bo that we're not going to get to. As usual, I get preoccupied and wordy when it comes to the Jewish calendar. But the Jewish calendar is where it starts. Pesach exists because there is a Rosh Chodesh Nisan. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameah.